Okay, good. Because my nose is running.
Pick your nose now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I need to take off my shirt. I'm like, so look at my pits. They're like so sweaty.
Yeah.
That's like, I'm gonna change my shirt. Will you wait for me? Because I'm gonna be distracted by my own sweat pit. My pity sweat. Hold on. Okay.
Welcome to Shiny Epi People. I'm Lisa Bodner. This episode is dropping on Thanksgiving Day in the U.S. I don't know when you're going to listen to this, but in honor of today, I want to thank you. I never would have imagined that this podcast would have resonated with so many people, and I never would have imagined that this podcast would feed my soul the way it has. I think the best part for me is learning from a wide range of public health people and making new friends. How cool is that in a pandemic? I want to thank you for supporting the show by continuing to listen, by sharing the podcast on social media, by telling your friends to try it, by reaching out, and by giving some financial support if you can via my Patreon. I want to thank my amazing guests so far. Carrie, Penny, Haley, Teresa, Julia, Erica, Matt, Michelle, Jonathan, Maya, Hoda, Will, Gitika, Bertha, Louisa, Leslie, Kara, and upcoming episodes with Cheryl, Lori, Tim, and Yannicka. Your sharing of your stories and making yourself vulnerable, not just with telling me about your life, but also with your willingness to be silly, to let down that mask that many wear in their professional lives. You are what makes this show special. Today's show is with someone I am incredibly thankful for, my best friend, Kara Eckhart. Kara and I met in our PhD programs at UNC, and some 20 years later, living on opposite coasts of the U.S., with families and careers and lives, we have remained super close. This is part one of my talk with Kara. We discuss why she chose to move to Portland, her home, and take a position that's a primarily teaching job. She tells me why she loves teaching epidemiology to undergraduates, and then we act completely ridiculous, which is super on brand for our relationship. In a month, I will release part two with Kara, where we focus on the meaning and value of strong friendship. Now, listen, I am committed to making episodes that are about 30 minutes long. I've heard from many of you that you like this length, and I do too. However, I am straying from that today with a longer episode because talking with Kara makes me so happy, and sharing her with you is important to me. And it's a holiday weekend in the U.S., so make your turkey and dive into our conversation. Please note that this episode, as with basically all of my episodes, has swear words and may deal with, quote, adult themes. This is why every episode has that little E next to it, which indicates explicit. So maybe wear some headphones if little ears are nearby. I hope you enjoy this chat. Kara, my best friend. She's on my podcast.
Yoo-hoo! Hi, Lisa B.
So excited. First, I need to comment on I'm really enjoying this nerdy headset that you're wearing. Are you using this for teaching?
I am using this for teaching, sometimes with success and sometimes with massive failure. I teach a couple different classes. Second week of class, I am online with my synchronous epi section, which is the group that I see each week, and we actually meet online. There are 71 undergraduate students in this class.
Oh, that's a lot.
So they're all in there. This is only the second week of class, and I'm not used to my headset. And so I had just gotten a new computer the night before. Jay got it. This is my husband. Got it all set up, but he did not put the power cord into the computer. So I didn't realize that, and it was a brand new computer. So I'm teaching. And all of a sudden, it's saying plug into a power source, the computer is going to die. And so I'm looking around and it's nowhere. And I'm like looking under my desk and I'm still teaching, but like trying to look over my shoulder and see if the box. And finally, I'm like, this computer is going to die. So I need to go find this power cord. And so I said to my class, okay, I'm going to give you 5 minutes. I'm going to go look for this power cord, take a break. Keep in mind, 71 burgeoning epidemiologists. Well, I walk away from my desk to go look for the power cord, and I leave my headset on and the mic on because I'm not used to it.
Because you weren't thinking.
Yeah.
Because you weren't tethered to a computer.
No, I wasn't tethered, and I was just kind of like in my own world. Now, you know me, but like I talk out loud to myself constantly. I am constantly in conversation with myself out loud. And I swear all the time. So I just have this very Kara conversation with myself about where this power cord is. The conversation goes like this, something along these lines. Where the fuck is that power cord? Fuck. Is it in here? Oh, fuck. That's the wrong power cord. Fuck. You know, and so forth and so on. And I'm just walking around. Fuck. Oh my God, my computer's going to fucking die. I can't believe it's the fucking second week of class. Aiden, my 17-year-old, was like in there, and I passed by him, and he's like, Mom, you know you're still wearing your headset. So I kind of walk back into my office and, you know, and sit down, and I'm just like, oh my God. The chat room was hysterical. So the students were just, you know, LOL, LOL, oh my gosh. Somebody wrote in, she is all of us looking for something in their house, you know? Like, somebody else writes in, she swears like a sailor, wow, you know? I guess it went over well if I only knew, you know, 12 years ago when I started teaching that if I just dropped F-bombs that, you know, I would endear myself to my students. And that was the key to being your favorite professor.
Do you remember when we met?
I do. You and I started our PhD programs. I started my PhD program. You were already a year into it, but I started my PhD program at Chapel Hill, and you were there, and you were like the fun second year person. And I remember that there was like a student social hour of some kind. I want to say it was at Top of the Hill, or it was
I arranged that.
That's what I was going to say. I think it was you, because even then you were a celebrator. And
I was.
So we met there, and I was like, we're going to be friends because she is fun and I am fun. And therefore, fun shall ensue together.
I remember that the first time I met you was in Journal Club. I remember thinking that you laughed a lot, which was great, but that you talked a lot. And not just in Journal Club. I don't mean
all
like you talked
time.
A lot. You just talked a lot. Well, all the time.
When I'm nervous and I don't know people,
yes.
I absolutely talk so much more.
Yeah.
Anything that feels remotely uncomfortable, I will fill it with words.
You took a position that had more of a teaching responsibility. I know how happy this job makes you and how much you love it.
I don't know if I knew I would love it as much as I do when I started it. And, you know, there's a million circumstances that sort of like led to me taking this job. You know, I had been in a postdoc. I was living in Washington, D.C. My husband was working at a big law firm there. And I had two children, you know, kind of towards the end of my PhD. So I had my son, I was pregnant when I defended my dissertation proposal. And then I wrote my dissertation like following his birth. And then during my postdoc, I became pregnant with my second child. And that was like a really tough pregnancy for me. I had a couple pregnancy losses that were ectopic pregnancies. I had infertility. I had to do IVF. My pregnancy with my daughter ended up being a really complicated pregnancy where I had placenta previa and I ended up on bed rest for 4 months. You know, so there was kind of like a lot going on. And at that point, like my husband and I sort of talked about moving back to Oregon. We're both from Oregon. We both really felt a connection. And I know you did too. And that was, you know, part of what led you to your job with like your home state and your home city. And, you know, honestly, as a woman, it felt really hard to picture a reality in DC that was going to be the kind of reality that I wanted to live, which is to say that my husband was working a very busy law firm job, you know, watching my peers all kind of stop working so that they could drive their kids an hour a day to some private school, trying to figure out how I could, you know, enter an academic position and take care of my children. And I ended up applying for the job that became my job and looking at it and feeling like, okay, this could maybe really, you know, be a good fit for me. Now, the job that I have is a faculty position. It's a 9-month appointment, which means that we don't have funding over the summer. Like, we're kind of like academic year, you know, employees. It's a hard money position, which means that my salary is paid for with hard money and I'm not responsible for raising any of it via grants or research. I can, and we are encouraged to do research, and I have been involved in research, but you know, there's limitations on that. So for example, the most amount of FTE I can contribute towards research with my position is 50%. So you know, and when I arrived, I sort of had never taught. Like, you know, it's so weird. It's like you go to academic training, you go learn how to be a PhD, and now you're going to teach a class, and we have absolutely no training.
We're like a teacher. Okay. You know, you're just like, okay.
Yeah. And teaching, you know, is like a whole other ballgame. I kind of like immediately fell in love with it. I think you really have, like, you really feel impact. You feel a difference in what you're doing. And I think, you know, I'm training people who are going into the field of public health. I see so many of my students who then end up in MPH programs. I just sat on the dissertation defense of a student who I had as an undergraduate, and now I'm on her doctoral committee.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, a lot of them don't know what epidemiology is when they walk into my classroom. And so I get the like amazing pleasure of kind of like opening their eyes and explaining this area to them and watching them fall in love with it. And I also am there at the beginning, and I have this sort of responsibility, I think, and opportunity to help them from day one think about some of the things that I hope we're all thinking about as epidemiologists, like social determinants of health and social justice and how to be a critical thinker. And I love the exact kind of students that we have at PSU. And
yeah, tell me about the students.
So at Portland State University, which is where I am, and I should say, because they always want us to say this now, that we are now part of the OHSU-PSU School of Public Health. So we are a joint school of public health, one of very few. I think there's only one other. So at PSU, we have, it's our largest state university. And a lot of our students are first-generation college students. A lot of them are balancing families and children and jobs. A lot of them went to school when they were younger and then took a break and have returned. We have a lot of traditional students, too, who are just, you know, straight out of high school and starting the 4 years. But like in my experience, you know, I went to schools where everyone just kind of was in the same boat. Everyone had kind of left high school and was there for their 4 years. And they were sort of, that was where they were able to, you know, have this amazing privilege of being able to devote all of their energy to their studies. And that's quite a different situation from the one that I'm in. And it's just such a rich, incredible learning environment to be in with just students that I feel so honored to champion.
You mentioned that we are not trained in how to be a teacher.
No, we're not.
We might have a TA position, but you know, that's a term and all you do is grade papers or whatever. I can imagine that a lot of people who are coming out of their training are a little nervous about taking a teaching job. Mm-hmm. If you could sort of summarize like how you managed it, maybe what recommendations you would give to someone, you know, who had our training, meaning no teaching training at all, and how to go about this and end up, you know, maybe loving teaching.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I really did not know what I was doing when I was coming in. Even if you don't think you're going to take a quote unquote teaching position, you know, you very likely will still teach. And so if that's something that you want to do well, finding some way to work in your doctoral program to get some training in that is great. Like I was the director of our PhD program in community health here at PSU for 4 years and did a bunch of curriculum revision in our PhD program while I was the director of that. And one thing that we added was a required semester of a teaching and pedagogy class where they each design a course syllabus where they have to design assignments, show how they would assess certain things, have learning objectives, explain how they would map those learning objectives to assessment tools, have a sort of teaching philosophy. So they have to do that. In addition, they have an independent study where they have weekly meetings with a professor and design curriculum with that professor that they then teach during the term. So, you know, if something like that doesn't exist, most training programs have room for things like independent studies. And so if you can find a professor who's willing to work with you to help you design something that would be really valued. And I know for certain that when you're on the job market and you're applying to faculty positions, it is nice to be able to say that you have some training.
You know, so many jobs that you apply for academic positions, they require you to write a teaching statement. Yes. I was literally like, what the fuck do I write? I have like never taught anything legitimately. Yeah.
And it's
and
like,
I don't know what a teach. Yeah. My philosophy.
Your philosophy and how you approach class. And like, these are things we literally never talked about in our doctoral training programs. So, I mean, I will say another thing is most universities have some type of offices and resources that you probably were never aware of as a student. But for example, you know, at my school, we have the Office of Academic Innovation. And if you want to work with them, they will help you. They will come in and listen to you teach. They will give you feedback. They will help you write a syllabus. They will help you design an online class. They will train you in all kinds of things. They will, you know, they have a library of pedagogy books. They have workshops. They have, you know, meetings with people that you can set up a weekly meeting. They have training programs for junior faculty where you go with other junior faculty and basically have like, you know, like a writing group you would have for a research paper, only it's a course design group where you meet and you, you know, work on your classes together. So there's often, you know, resources there.
I found that people are often quite generous about sharing slides. I mean, I see this all the time on Twitter, like, you know, I'm starting a class in this. Would someone be willing to share information? There's a lot of like syllabus exchange. Would you feel okay with someone reaching out to you and asking
100%, yes. I feel like why would we as people who are trained in research think that we're all going to get this right without talking to each other? Like that just seems to go against everything we were ever taught, right? In the research world, we're trying to get to some answer. We write a manuscript, you communicate with others, you try to replicate it. I tell you what went wrong in my class, you learn from that, or you write. We have our strengths and limitations and we share those and we grow and we have this like cumulative knowledge. I don't know why people get so possessive about their, you know, their course design, you know, and for sure we shouldn't be like just copying someone else's course because we come to this as individuals with individual strengths and experiences that we should be working hard to share in our classrooms. But you want to hear about my syllabus? You want to look at it? Ask me.
Yeah.
And even just like nitty gritty stuff. Like when I think when I first had my first syllabus, it was like, here's my name and here's my office and like, here's your assignments. And then you teach your first class and you have all the shit go down, right? Like some people ask you for extensions and this and late and you're like, oh my God, like I have nothing about that in my syllabus. I didn't know that was supposed to be there. And then you add that and you add that and you add that. And now I have like this streamlined yet detailed, you know, manifesto of a syllabus that answers every question that could ever come up.
You know? Can you share what some of those are?
Yeah. And the students, by the way, ask me, they'll be like, oh my gosh, like, why is this in your syllabus? Does someone actually do? I'm like, everything is in here because students do this. Like, I didn't just make this up. It literally was blank until I met you guys. This exists because of you. So one thing I put in there, and I try to make sure that it doesn't come off as negative, is about letters of recommendation. So in the first couple, you know, times around, I would have students show up and say, you know, I took your class a year ago. Can you write me a letter of recommendation for school? And I'm looking at this person thinking, I have taught so many sections of 70 people since a year ago, like hundreds of people. I have no idea who you are. I don't remember anything about you. And I don't feel like that's going to be a good letter, right? And so I added a piece to my syllabus that said, here is how to, you know, it's basically like an how to nurture a relationship with a professor so that you can be in a good position to then ask them for a letter of recommendation later. Also saying that I don't write letters of recommendation for students that I know nothing about other than they're great in my class. And not because I'm trying to be mean, but because that isn't going to serve them. You know, a lot of them are in large classes and they don't know maybe how to create that kind of relationship with a professor. So I tried to, you know, add some examples of here are ways that you can get to know me and I can get to know you. I'm happy to meet outside of office hours. If you don't know what to talk about at office hours, here's some ideas. Here are ways that we could have a sit in the front, ask questions. You don't have to be a spontaneous person. Plan them ahead. It's going to be a year before I see you again. Send me an email every now and then. Let's keep up, you know, just kind of walking them through that. So like, that's something I have in my syllabus. I have things about, honestly, email etiquette.
Yes.
I'm sure I say it in a better way than this, but like, don't email me with like, hey, you and emojis and like, and learn how to sort of communicate professionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, put something helpful in the subject line, so forth and so on. I have something in my syllabus that says, I have a life and you should have a life outside of school. And I will not be checking email in the evenings and I will not be checking it over the weekends. I also did a funny thing one time a couple of years ago where I thought, God, the syllabus is long, but you know, it's kind of here because in a way it's a contract, right? So it's like you have it in writing and that way no one later can say, but I didn't know that. You're like, it's in the syllabus, right? So I put somewhere like 3 pages into my syllabus, I had like, alert, if you've made it this far, congratulations. And like, if you send me an email with a picture of a kitten in it, I will put you in the drawing for like a gift card from Starbucks.
Did people do it?
Yeah, but so few. Lisa was so sad.
Really?
It was I think maybe 4. That was just a little Easter egg hunt there. I haven't done it since. I don't know if my ego can take it. So
yeah. Okay, so Kara, you are one of those annoying people who started baking bread during quarantine.
Oh my God, I know, it's totally true.
Now, for the listeners, I'll tell you that something, either you could view it as very sweet and thoughtful or very obnoxious, was that Kara used to send me photos of every single thing that she made, and it was beautiful.
I was ready to open a bakery.
And you would send them to me all the time and be like, look, I made this German frothel fruit and freefle. And I'd be like, what is that? And why does it look so fucking good? Like, fuck you. And you're like, what? And I was just like sitting at home being like, you guys, we're going to open a can of soup tonight. I don't know.
It's so weird. I feel almost embarrassed that I have like was totally, I mean, and I continue to be on that bandwagon. I literally just made a new bread because I got obsessed because, you know, Great British Baking Show is back on, like new season, right? And so watching, 100% watching. So I just ordered.
Is Mary Berry still on?
No. God, Lisa, for the love of God. She was gone several seasons ago. Where have you been?
But is the guy that has like the
Paul
gray
Hollywood
hair,
piercing blue eyes? Yes.
Isn't he like a dick in real life?
I don't know if he's a dick. I have no idea, but I did order his bread book and I just made his, it's a bread that has both molasses and Guinness stout beer in it. And it was so freaking good. Yeah. So fucking good.
Okay. And I think his eyes are not that color.
Maybe.
I think it's
all in, he's like a vampire or something. I absolutely embrace this insanely cliched, like I did, but God, I love it. I have control, and that's always good, right? So let's get down to what's most important, control, right? So like, I can make something, and I can follow the directions, and I'm going to have something good turn out at the end. And I think when everything is so unknown and scary in so many ways, it's just like a very good feeling. Mm-hmm. That's thing number one. Thing number two, it's like a thing that you're doing that's not being at the computer. And I think in the Zoom times, this is really important, right? So it's like doing something with your hands. And I think when I'm really stressed out, I'm not like a person who likes to be still. So I'm always just like doing more things when I'm stressed out. I mean, gosh, on election night, I was like breaking down 8 million boxes in my backyard at like 11 o'clock at night with like a knife, just like hacking through them. I don't know. Like, I guess I freaking love bread. I fucking love bread. Like, I love it more than most desserts. Like, I just want to eat all the bread with all the butter all the time. But I always want something bready. So, like, there's that.
Would you rather be a chicken, a pig, or a cow?
Oh, God. I don't think I want someone handling my teats all the time. So I'm going to go no on cow.
But Kara, why not? I mean, come on.
They have nice eyelashes. I don't want to be a chicken. They're gross and like dinosaur-y. I guess, I mean, God, pigs seem to like really enjoy life. I think I'm going to go with pig. Just eat whatever the fuck you want. Roll around in the mud. Make noise when you want to make noise. Not worry. Not give a damn. I'm going pig.
Pigs are smart.
Yeah, they're smart.
Yeah, they just get to have fun.
Yeah.
And cows just chew the cud.
Yeah, that's
and stand
there's
in
a lot of regurgitation involved in being a cow. And I think
gross.
That's gross. And it's all just grass. Like, I like food and I don't want to just eat grass. I want to be like a pig and eat like all the things.
Yeah. And you want to stick your snout in
Yeah.
And just go for it.
Yeah, I do.
I want to like be beefy. Not beefy like a cow, but like I want to have like porky. I just want to be porky. I want to be like a porky pig.
Porky pig. Yes.
I want to snort.
I want to take up space. And if I want to like say something, I want to squeal that shit out loud and clear.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Pig. Yeah.
Pig all the way. Pig.
Pig all the way.
Pig.
What is something embarrassing that you are obsessed with?
First, let me say that I don't get embarrassed easily anymore because I'm 44 and who the fuck cares?
It's the best thing about aging, isn't it?
Right. I am pretty obsessed with Werther's Originals.
Oh my God. I love that so much because I'm sorry, Pat Bodner. I love you. But one of the things we would laugh about from time to time is your mom always having hard candies with her. And now look at you, Lisa, embracing the hard candy life.
And hashtag hard candy life. I mean, I think I'm especially embarrassed about Werther's because they're sort of like grandma candy.
It's like the ultimate grandma candy. But you know who else is obsessed with them? Jay, my husband. And so has always bags of Werther's like down in his like desk Zoom area for like boring Zoom meetings. Like,
yeah.
And so I have been known to pinch a Werther's or two. I'm with you. They're good.
Okay. The other kind of embarrassing thing, maybe this I'm legitimate embarrassed about, is that I wouldn't say obsessed because that makes me sound like a stalker, but I am really fascinated by the life that my Pilates instructor leads on Instagram.
So you're a little bit stalkery there, huh?
I mean, a little bit, but it feels like as often as she posts and the stuff that she posts, she wants people to be, but like, you know, obsessed with her.
Of course, the life that anyone leads on Instagram is a fake life, right?
I know. And that's why I'm embarrassed that I'm so obsessed with it because she has the life that you and I used to have before kids, you know?
Yeah.
She like lives with her boyfriend in this really nice place in Boston. She has like cocktails on the rooftop and goes and visits her family on the coast of Maine. And
you mean she's not like wrapped in an old scraggly robe sucking on grandma candy in front of a Zoom screen? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah.
I understand what... Let's be clear. I understand that social media is not real. I'm not like crying in bed at night, but in those moments, you're just like, oh yeah, like, wouldn't it be nice to not have kids and to have, you know, me and a lover like sit on the patio as the sun is setting, like while we're drinking martinis, you know, that's what it is. And like, you know, they wear these like jaunty little hats. I think that's the right word. Jaunty?
I think jaunty is a good word. That's like, you know, you kind of have, you know, some chutzpah. You're like wearing that hat and you're like, yeah, you know, I can pull this off. And it's like totally normal for me to wear this jaunty hat. I'm not like feeling like I'm, you know, wearing a persona. Yeah. It's just natural.
Anyway, do you always return library books on time?
Oh my God, no. Like, okay. Not at all. Like, not even close. No, I consider the fee and the fines as like part of the service. Like, I'm going to borrow this book for as long as I need it, and I'll pay you whatever the fuck it is that I owe you when I'm good and done. Like, and it's still going to be cheaper than buying the book. Mm-hmm, and like, I don't even like worry about it. I just check out the book and they're like, it's due then. Oh, this is a new release. You can only have it for 2 weeks. And I'm like, okay, right. Like, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Not like, I do return them though.
What's the most embarrassing thing you bought during quarantine?
I think I don't know if embarrassing is the word, but like, I've bought a lot of things that fall into certain categories. So maybe it's like the amounts of them is what makes it embarrassing.
Okay.
Okay. So I have bought more bralettes than any person should buy, right?
Bralettes.
Anyone who's not...
Yeah, people may need an explanation.
They're like, not a bra because they don't really have the support of a bra, but they're like bra-ish. And so they kind of hold you in a little bit, but they're like really comfortable and you can like, right? And I just don't see the need for an actual bra in this time of COVID. Okay. And so I have really embraced the bralette. And I have tried a lot of them. Like, look at this one. This one's so soft. This one's so, like, and it's just like, will I be able to go back? I don't know. That scares me a little bit. Like, I think when I put on a real bra at some point, I'm just going to be like, whoa, I'm going to feel like I'm putting on some kind of, like, 18th century corsetry or something, you know? So I've bought a lot of those. I am obsessed now with the Trader Joe's soup dumplings. Do you know of these?
No. Well, no.
Literally, when I write a grocery list and Jay's going to Trader Joe's, the list, he actually was making fun of me for this yesterday. He's like, every time you write this list, you write all the soup dumplings. Like, I'm like, go there with your cart and just empty the freezer of all the soup dumplings. So those are keeping me happy.
So what do you do with them?
They're just so good, Lisa. They're like a dumpling. No, you put them in the microwave. They're like a dumpling, but inside the dumpling, there's like dumpling filling, like the meat part. But then there's also like broth. So when you bite into it, it's just kind of like a little mini soup inside each dumpling.
Oh, I get it. You kind of have to eat it
like over a spoon or something because you can kind of bite into it and have a situation of like soup.
Okay.
You know, spewing out of your mouth. But they're so good.
Before you go on, Trader Joe's need to fucking sponsor this podcast.
Yeah. It comes up like every time.
Right? You didn't buy like a pulse ox machine, did you?
A what? A pulse? Oh, I did buy that. I did.
Okay.
Wait, is that what you're thinking about? Pulse oximeter? Yes. I totally did. Mm-hmm. As it was all hitting New York and we were first like learning all this stuff about the pandemic and how like people's blood oxygen could be like low without them realizing it, I totally bought a pulse ox machine. Yeah. As everyone should. Ready for anything. You want to take my blood oxygen? I'm ready. You want some soup dumplings? I got 1,000. Given that this is 2020, what are some of your go-to ways of coping with stress?
I have learned through 20 plus years of therapy that...
Lucky that 20 plus years of therapy preceded COVID. So you'd arrived at this place in time.
I did. It was just in the right amount of time.
In time.
Because it was really just in the last year that I hit my stride in therapy.
There you go.
Therapy has taught me, we're going to get serious for a minute.
Okay.
Therapy has taught me how to change my expectations of myself and really be kind to myself in moments where I'm feeling stress. And I'm very good at like identifying stress before it gets bad to like immediately like stop, take, you know, inventory and be like, I don't feel good. What needs to change? And also the antidepressants really help.
Where would we be without them? I'm 100% with their number one coping mechanism.
Okay, so Kara, you help me cope with stress a lot.
Aww.
You and I talk very frequently.
Very.
No matter what we talk about, we laugh our butts off.
That is the best stress relief there is, I think. Laughter.
And like just being able to like see the absurdity in so many of these situations, they do cause stress. But then to be able to like look at them with this outside eye of like, how fucking crazy is this? Yeah. And that we can just laugh about
it. And just to like be able to vent to someone who gets you and like use all your words.
Yes.
And all your swears.
Yes.
And all your fucks and your shits.
Yeah. And like human connection is really my go-to when I'm stressed.
Which is hard in COVID.
It is. Yeah. But like, you know, the podcast has been great for that. Just like texting friends, reaching out, hearing, you know, having feelings validated. I'm feeling really overwhelmed today. What are you feeling? And, you know, being open enough to talk about it so that you know that you're not the only one on earth who is like overwhelmed right now.
Yeah.
What's the most overrated flavor?
Well, I mean, overrated? Let's first just say that the disgusting, most horrible flavor there is grape. Any kind of fake grape flavor is the worst flavor.
I disagree. I like grape.
And let me tell you something. I am not alone in this. Just as from a research standpoint, there is a store in my neighborhood that always has Jolly Ranchers. And I went in there one time and all it was grape. And I said, that's disgusting. Like, why do you only have grape Jolly Ranchers? And he said, I fill up the bowl with a mixture every morning. And by the end of the day, all I ever have is grape. I don't know if that's overrated. It's just gross.
I think blue raspberry is totally fucking like overrated.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I also think that watermelon is a disgusting flavor.
I agree. Okay. I'm glad we found some, you know, some common ground here. Okay. It tastes nothing like actual watermelons, which are delicious.
Kara, if you had to be on a reality TV show, which would you choose and why?
Okay. I don't know if this counts, but I think it counts.
Okay.
I am like 100% obsessed with the moderators in the presidential debates, and I want to be one. Does that count? I think that counts as a reality TV show. Like,
it is.
I am watching those debates, and like, I know other people are watching them, you know, to, I don't know what they're watching them for, really. Like, don't we know what we need to know? Right? Like, I think we know what we need to know. Right? But like, in theory, people are watching them to like pay attention to what the candidates are saying. I'm 100% zeroed in on that moderator every time. Like 100%. That is all I'm hearing. And it's like everything they're doing. I'm just like, no, no, like don't do that. Like do it like this. Or like, why are you asking the question that way? Or like, why aren't you cutting him off? And I just like, if someone asked me if I had to pay like $10,000, if I had to pay to be, I would be like, sign me up. Here's your money. I want to do this so bad. I am ready. I am ready, PBS, so, CNN, MSNBC, right here. I so want it.
Why would you be such a great moderator?
Because I don't take no bullshit from anybody.
Yeah.
A.
Yeah.
And B, I am a good controller of mayhem. I think I really am. Like having children and like large classes of students, like, you know, having classroom controller, like keeping people's attention. And I just... I absolutely fantasize about it, like a lot. I even think about what I would wear, Lisa. Like, I think about it a lot.
What would you wear?
A lot. Just like not a boring suit. I would not wear blue and I would not wear red. I would wear like green and it would be awesome. And I would have.
You don't
like,
wear green.
Yeah, that's true. Purple, maybe. But like, I just really feel like I could bring that to the next level. I really do.
In debates, they don't want to make the moderator the story. And I fear that if you were the moderator, the story would be about
you. It's true. I would be so awesome.
They also would just be like, can the moderator stop talking?
It's true. But I would ask such good questions. I was so upset when I found out there was only one vice presidential debate because I was like, that's it for the moderators. Like, I've seen them all. And then they canceled the one because dumbass got COVID. Like, right? I was like, what? Like, I'm missing, like, you took away one of them from me? It was heart-wrenching.
We didn't even touch on the female friendship stuff. Okay, so we're just going to continue this.
Okay.
Because we're just, we've shockingly have too much to say.
I know. All right, talk to you soon.
Mwah.
Bye.
Bye. We'll find another time.
Okay, so I think we should talk about the next bit, and we should chug a beer before we do it.
Wait a minute. Well, hold on a second. Are you saying the next time we record, we chug a beer, and then we record?
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
All right.